Shishi Kishore Kishori Ki Jai. Okay, the stalwarts are here. Thank you, everybody, for making it to our last session of our discussion around the idea of the house the whole world can live in.
And
Haribol. We've been building a house downstairs. The architect has been employing the laborers and the contractors. It looks pretty cool if you guys want to go see it. Mother Radhika has been helping the children to flesh out Prabhupada's house in the physical. But we've been using this metaphor. We've offered a few different utilities for it. One is to help us appreciate the community that Srila Prabhupada is a part of. And we've discussed how Srila Prabhupada's point of pride was that he was a disciple. He was a follower. He was a servant of someone, of several someones. And that he was delivering the message of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. And that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was the foremost messenger of Srila Rupa Goswami, the foremost of the Rupanugas. This was Srila Prabhupada's pride. And we talked about how dangerous it is, given Srila Prabhupada's own heart, when we isolate him and remove him from that sangha, we remove him from that context of being a disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, who was executing the vision of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And if we isolate Srila Prabhupada from that, how it hurts him and it hurts us. Because that's not his own mood, that's not his own experience. And yet that's the tendency in the material world. We're always trying to reduce things. We're always trying to isolate, to create independence, and to oversimplify, because we're functioning from the space of the mind. So in this last discussion, I wanted to talk about and help us work through the metaphor in a kind of down-to-earth way with our own experience, because we have here on the board Srila Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, Srila Prabhupada, and Gaura Kishore Das Babaji. There's just one person missing from the board. Who's that? Yeah, you. Me. Where do we fit in that context? I'd like to open up a discussion around that. And particularly I'd like to discuss the role of intelligence in helping us relate to the eminent acharyas. We discussed also the danger of using that word previous. It's a little tricky. The idea of the previous acharyas means somehow they're historical figures that have no presence in our life today. They're not in the present, they're prior, they're previous. Again, it's a great disservice. So while it's a word that works in one way, it's a word that can trick our mind in another way, from missing out on the opportunity of having a relationship with these people who are very ready to offer that if we are willing to receive it. In opening up that conversation, I'd like to give us a perspective on Srila Prabhupada's own decision-making and how it's not as certain and clear-cut as we would always like to make it out to be. In 1969, Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to Rai Ram Prabhu. This is one of those famous letters, so maybe somebody knows what it says. This street chanting is your most important business. Srila Prabhupada said, this street chanting, means Harinam, is your most important business. And then, strikingly, what was number two on the list of most important things? Chanting your 16 rounds. So Srila Prabhupada was writing this devotee, who was one of the managers of a particular center, that the most important thing for you and your community to do is to go out on the street, chant Hare Krishna, then chant 16 rounds, then read, then do some service. That was the kind of list of priorities that Srila Prabhupada offered. It was striking, and it's a favorite letter for certain people with a certain mood to bring out and show, see, Prabhupada said. Now in 1972, Prabhupada wrote another famous letter, this time to Giriraj Maharaj. This one's maybe even a little more famous. Does anybody know which letter I might be referencing there? Please stop this street chanting. Prabhupada's writing Giriraj Maharaj, who's there in Bombay. What famous center is there in Bombay? Yeah, Juhu. Hare Krishna land. Bombay, Srila Prabhupada affectionately referred to as his office. And he had a vision for Juhu Beach that is, at the time it was basically a swamp when the devotees acquired the land, and the devotees themselves were very confused why Srila Prabhupada was so insistent on having a temple be established here. And not just any temple, but a 5-star temple. Right? He wanted a 5-star resort style guest house. He wanted a first class restaurant. He wanted an enormous edifice for the deities to be worshipped in. He wanted it to be done in a very grand way. And that's because Srila Prabhupada could see, he was Trikalagya, that this was going to become the Hollywood of India. This was going to be the Malibu of India. All the celebrities, all the famous kind of media personalities would aggregate and congregate in this area, and if we build them a very posh temple, they'll come and see Krishna. Radha Rasa Bihari. He had that vision. And so he asked Giriraj Maharaj, who was kind of in charge of that area, he said, please stop this street chanting. What was Srila Prabhupada's logic?
They think you're beggars.
When the devotees were out on the streets in Bombay, people would just throw money at them. Coins though, like paisa, a rupee, 2 rupees. Because they thought they were just some street bands, buskers, which is a common thing in India. You'll see mendicants, or not even mendicants in the spiritual sense, but just people down on their luck, singing some bhajan to get a few coins, to buy a little meal. We've all seen that person. And so the devotees were being confused with that type of crowd. And Srila Prabhupada knew that that would be no way to establish Mahaprabhu's preeminent position in Bombay, is if we were confused with kind of like the homeless crowd. So he said, stop this street chanting and instead focus on what?
Life membership.
Yeah, life membership. Who's heard of the ISKCON Life Members Program? Anybody have a family member or themselves who is an official ISKCON Life Member? Yeah. It was an incredibly effective scheme that Srila Prabhupada came up with to be able to enroll well-to-do Hindu people in Mahaprabhu's mission without making them feel like they had to convert, give up their family tradition, etc., 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 shave up, start wearing saffron cloth and dhotis, and without having to take on all the externals that would kind of threaten their position in society. They could still support Mahaprabhu's mission in a very profound way, giving substantial money, and when possible, facilitating connections for the devotees, giving Prabhupada places to speak and connections to higher government officials for doing things like establishing an enormous temple in a swamp in Bombay. Who knows the famous Nair situation where the guy was trying to steal the land from Prabhupada. So his ultimate last attempt was foiled because Prabhupada had so many connections with so many wealthy people in Bombay who called up the highest stations of the government and the military and said, you can't allow this to happen. You have to get rid of this guy, because this guy had paid off the local officials to basically attack the devotees and take them off the land, the local police. But because Prabhupada was connected to the higher people, the people in the higher stations, they called their higher ups and said, you'll get fired, we'll get rid of you before we'll let Swamiji not be there. And so of course they didn't want to lose their comfortable government position, and so they went down and adjusted. Now this kind of connection and relationship, that wasn't going to be established chanting Hare Krishna on the streets, and it actually might have been compromised. Srila Prabhupada recognized this, and so he wrote this letter to Giriraj. We though, 50 years later, are sitting with these two very seemingly contradictory instructions in front of us. This street chanting is most important business, please stop the street chanting. So a kind of memorable way to help us chew on what these two letters imply is that what Srila Prabhupada said is not necessarily what he would say. Yes. What Srila Prabhupada said is not necessarily what he would say. Can anyone think of other examples in Srila Prabhupada's Leela where he was going one direction and then decided to go another? We might need to take a minute for this one. We don't normally think this way about our founder Acharya. Yes, beautiful example. That initially women were not being given Brahmin Diksha, and then Mother Govinda found out and she went straight to Swamiji. She said, why are they getting something we're not getting? You said that everybody is equal on the spiritual level and you've always treated us as such, so why is this any different now? And Srila Prabhupada accepted that premise from his disciple. He said, you're right. Actually, in the Western countries, men and women are the same. They're treated the same. And it's actually even demonstrated. I was reading in one purport a few days ago, Prabhupada was saying, we're practically seeing that the women are more qualified than the men. They're as capable, if not more. So Prabhupada began this practice of giving second initiation to women after being, we could say, adjusted in his consideration by Govinda Mataji. Yeah, great example. What's another one? Who feels a little uncomfortable thinking about Prabhupada in this way? No? Just not familiar with thinking about Prabhupada in this way, maybe? So I wanted to, I'm going to share a framework around intelligence. Because we talk about the mind and intelligence often. We don't always know what we mean by mind and intelligence. So what is the function of the mind? Thinking, feeling, willing. Okay. Who else has something to add?
Accept and reject.
Accepting and rejecting. Yeah, accepting and rejecting. Down to the practical level, what does the mind do? It comes up with ideas. Hey, this would be nice. Yeah, vision, that's a good way of putting it too. Yeah, the mind says, hey, let's get that. That would be nice, $1 million. Who's ever thought it'd be nice to have $1 million? That's the mind. Now, who's ever gotten $1 million? Focus, yes. Who's ever obtained $1 million? Why not? We all thought we should have it. Our mind suggested it would be nice. So where's the $1 million? Okay, we can blame it on karma, but in this talk we're not going to. In this discussion, we're going to take the premise that the difference between the mind's idea of $1 million and our obtaining it is intelligence. An example I like to use often in Michigan is that everybody wants to go to the University of Michigan, right? Every high school senior right now, and in fact I just got a message from, you all know him too, so I won't use his name to embarrass him, but he's a Ramapad Maharaj Parvar family member in Michigan, and he texted me the other day, Prabhuji, please bless me, I want to get into U of M. Admission letters are coming in a few days, so if I come there, then I can stay near Harmony Collective, it would be nice. And he's a really sweet devotee, I hope he's able to get in. But maybe he won't get in, that's okay too. But every young junior, senior in Michigan wants to go to the University of Michigan, even if they don't admit it. The only reason they wouldn't admit it is because they don't have grades good enough to even bother trying. But if they could, they would, because it's such a good school and prestigious and the football team and blah, 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 blah. But what's the difference between somebody that wants to go to U of M and somebody that gets into U of M? Qualification, okay. That's a bit of a vague description. What do we mean by qualification? So what's the difference? Everybody wants to get in, but what do we usually call somebody that actually gets in? That's right. We say he or she is very intelligent. Right? That's an intelligent young man. That's an intelligent young woman. Is smart. Yes. And what makes them intelligent is that they were able to make the little choices that brought them to the goal that everybody else's mind also had. Everybody's mind said, yeah, let's get into U of M. But when it was Friday night, how many people were going to a party and how many people were going to bed on time so that they can wake up early in the morning so that they can go well rested to their ACT? Sorry? Okay. If you could let me finish the thoughts and then we'll have time for comments at the end. Thank you. So the intelligence is what separated one student from another. That one wanted to get in, the other wanted to get in, but one was willing to make little choices in between. They saw the steps. For some it was just this mystical hope, getting into U of M. And for others, it was, I'm getting into U of M because I'm going to take these classes and I'm going to study these books and I'm going to get this internship and I'm going to join this club and I'm going to do this service activity. I'm going to get a letter of recommendation from that person. I'm going to take my ACT on this day. I'm going to take my SAT on this day. Who knows a college-bound student who's in that mode right now? Right? The very systematic process, step by step. The intelligence is what informs that experience. And eventually, the goal is achieved. The goal of the mind is achieved. Now, what is the function of the mind in that situation? To not come up with other ideas in the meantime. To stay fixed on that one goal. Let's get to U of M. That's what we really want. So if the mind is able to stay fixed, then the intelligence can make the adjustments day after day after day, helping to make the little choices to succeed. So what we want to do, the goal in Krishna consciousness is usually pretty clear, isn't it? Would you all agree it's the intelligence that gives us trouble? We say it's the mind that gives us trouble, but it's really because our intelligence is not very strong. And Krishna says as much in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. When Arjuna complains, hey, why am I compelled to do things I know I shouldn't do? Has anybody ever done something they know they shouldn't do? So what's Krishna's answer to that? Yeah, lust. Lust only. Now what's Krishna's solution to lust? Go to U of M. No. What's Krishna's solution to lust?
Control with your intelligence.
Deliberate spiritual intelligence. In the second chapter, Krishna also indicated this, but not as an answer to Arjuna's question. He says, Durenihi avaram karma buddhi yoga dhananjaya. Avaram karma, abominable activity, that's how Prabhupada translates. Keep abominable activity far away by engaging in buddhi yoga. Now, unsurprisingly, in the text, Srila Prabhupada translates buddhi yoga as Bhakti yoga. The literal meaning of buddhi, though, is intelligence, right? Like buddha means the intelligent one. So Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas, they equate this buddhi with bhakti. If we're able to make the choices that are in line with the Krishna consciousness, then even if we're not quite feeling that way yet, we're given the credit of being bhaktas. Even though the feeling of being a bhakta isn't quite come around. If that is really what our Krishna consciousness hinges on, then, is this use of intelligence, it's helpful to have a really rich understanding of what intelligence is. And so that's what I wanted to do today, is actually given Mother Shubhra, she's not here right now, but on our drive here, we were having this discussion around intelligence. And she shared with me a framework, which I've now come up with, as Raj says, I'm good at coming up with clever names, or Ujvala. I'm good at marketing. So the three eyes of intelligence, because in the New Age crowd, it's common to want to open your third eye. And there's this discussion around the third eye. And when you do that, then you'll be able to see with spiritual vision. So okay, we'll take that premise. And we're going to roll it into this discussion. Yeah, let's pry it open. We're going to roll it into a discussion around intelligence and the dynamics of the different kinds of intelligence. And how that's going to relate to this discussion that we've been having around our acharyas is that we're going to take a few of the controversial issues, we could say, in our society today. And we're going to ask ourselves, what is the dynamic of intelligence that an engineer would bring to that particular issue? And then what is that dynamic of intelligence that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, as the engineer, particularly, might bring to that issue? Everybody following so far? Okay, so we're going to break up into groups, but first we're going to create a list of just things that could be improved or adjusted in our society. And then from those, we're going to make a list of a solid five things that we would like to see addressed with intelligence. Because again, to Giriraj Maharaj, when Srila Prabhupada was passing away in Vrindavan, his final days, famously, he asked Giriraj Maharaj, do you think this movement will go on? And Giriraj Maharaj said, of course, Prabhupada, by your mercy and the holy name and the Bhagavatam, then things will happen. And what was Prabhupada's reply to his own question after Giriraj Maharaj had said that faithful answer? That's right. Just flip them. Organization and intelligence. Srila Prabhupada answered Giriraj Maharaj his own question. This movement will go on by organization and intelligence. And we really do ourselves a disservice to our own devotional service, each other, and Srila Prabhupada, when it's only Srila Prabhupada that we're looking to for that perspective. Because as I shared in that first example with the two letters, right? Sometimes Srila Prabhupada's idea or which direction he would go isn't clear. Because in two different circumstances, he went in two different apparent directions. And so when we welcome in the input, the vision, the intelligence of the other acharyas, and we approach them personally, not as a kind of Wikipedia page reading the bullet points, but as people, just like we've learned to approach Srila Prabhupada as a person to some degree, I hope we all have done that by now. If we approach those acharyas in that same mood, that they are a person capable of being present in my life today and giving me guidance, then we create a more wholesome dynamic for being able to recognize with our own intelligence how to take a progressive step forward in Krishna consciousness. Does that sound like a good way to spend the next hour or so together? Okay, cool. So first, is there anybody here that doesn't understand what's here on the whiteboard because you haven't been here yet, or I put you to sleep while you were here, or... So everybody understands the metaphor of the whole house, the house the world can live in, and how Srila Prabhupada, as the contractor, executed the vision and the techniques of these other devotees, and how we are fitting in as the labor force. Some of us specialized, some of us not so specialized, but we're being employed as the labor force by Srila Prabhupada's subcontractors, those that are following in his footsteps. But as Krishna says, because we've discussed a few times now, chapter 4, text 34 of Bhagavad Gita, why is that text famous? What is chapter 4, text 34? Yeah, that's the guru verse. Approach a spiritual master, inquire from them submissively, render service. The verse just before that, Krishna says, the sacrifice done in knowledge is better than the sacrifice of mere material possessions. And so then one would naturally ask, well, how do I get knowledge by which I can perform such a sacrifice? It's by approaching the spiritual master. So how can we approach these acharyas? That's the mood that we want to create in our own heart, giving ourselves permission and anticipation, desire to have that relationship with them. So we'll have at it. What could be better in our society today?
Message?
Okay. The message. Leadership. At what level leadership? Okay, so having leadership in the local level. Yeah. The leadership structure of ISKCON is very vague, actually. There's not a lot of accountability to it. So in some places it's strong because the person is strong, and in some places it's not because the person is not. There's actually no objective standard. If we were to go into any particular temple, there's no clear way for you to understand who's in charge and how to approach the person in charge if you have a concern. Some places have that in place, but that's on their effort. That's not on the effort of the society at large. That's missing at a whole. So yeah. Amen. Educate. I'm putting that at the top because that's a personal education for, we'll say, youth. Yes, we have the Child Protection Office, which is a kind of legalistic way of the idea of protecting children. It's kind of the bare minimum that even the karmis hold themselves to the standard of. But that was not the standard of protection that Srila Prabhupada spoke about. Srila Prabhupada's idea of protection was giving somebody a positive spiritual conception of life, which then makes them immune from the influence of Maya. And again, there's no standard idea, not even the attempt of a standard idea, around what every temple should be responsible for offering their children. We have a deity standard, but we have no standard for our children, who Prabhupada said are our most important service. So, yes, very beautiful one. Diseases and epidemics on a material level means like our general society in the world. Okay, physical disease. The future? Uh-huh. What else? Ma. Okay, more support for families. Yeah. And can you describe what you mean by support? Like you want financial support, you want... somebody to come and do some house. Resources for families. Yeah, okay, great. Okay. Ujjwala. I'm going to say temple ashram culture. Is that okay? Yep. Yeah, I'm definitely separating them. Rather than saying brahmacharya, I'm going to say temple ashram. And then grihastha ashram. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That might be over here with resources also. So community dynamic. Yeah, because Srila Prabhupada said international society for Krishna consciousness. So what is a society made of? And do we have those experiences right now together? Many places, unfortunately, it's the International Sunday Feast for Krishna consciousness. That's what's accepted as enough. That's, Prabhupada gave us Sunday Feast, we're doing Sunday Feast. Okay, he gave us Sunday Feast, but in the hopes that much more would come from that offering. Not that it would be shriveled down to only that. So what else is being offered as a society, as a community? Yes? That's my talent. Yeah. And then the communities that don't have that, and they're just like, you know, they're like in pieces, they're not really unified. Yeah, spiritual leadership. So, spiritual purpose. Yeah, I totally agree. That if the idea of a successful community is we just have a bunch of people that come, or we have a bunch of things going on, right? But the spiritual purpose, that goal that's meant to be fixed in mind, is not clearly present regularly and often and reminded to us by somebody who's really tasting it, then quickly things dissolve and get very petty. Srila Prabhupada says in a purport in second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, disturbance in the mind is due to a lack of a sense of a goal. And so these spiritual leaders, they keep that sense of a goal in perspective amongst all the other details that we might be doing. Yeah, that's a great one. Planting a tree. Thank you. Gardening. Farms. Cows. Varnashram. Congregational education, right? Who's had this experience the first 2-3 years of your Krishna consciousness? You were learning so much and you're developing so much, and then it seemed to like flatline. And now it's just kind of rehashing, recycling the same ideas in the same way, but without that sense of that you're really continuing to make deep progress. Yeah. So congregational education. And I think this program that we're at right now, this wonderful retreat that's been organized, thanks to Sundari Radha, everybody, a big Hari Bol, and Roma Padmaraj for taking the time out of his valuable schedule to be here with you all for as many days as he is, that's the kind of experience that a lot of places don't have. That kind of immersive and focused sangha, not around just the basics, always the same kind of standards, but really, we were talking about Mamgachi yesterday. It was so sweet. Maharaj was taking us to Navadvip and reciting the pastimes of Mahaprabhu and his associates. That kind of thing is not experienced everywhere. Cultural awareness. Oh, I like that. So you mean that the being aware of what kind of society is around us? What do you mean by cultural awareness? I don't want to put words in your mouth. Okay, so we'll keep that under congregational education then. Yeah, that's teaching the lifestyle of a faithful devotee. But I think your wording caught us onto another one, which is being aware of the society that we're amidst. I was just having this discussion with Ujjwala Prabhu that this tone, and you were discussing, we brought up the relationship of women to the society a few minutes ago, and this idea that grihastha ashram is this kind of shameful situation that you may find yourself in, right? This unfortunate circumstance that you just have to deal with and suffer through for 50 years, right? And if you can somehow or other, you know, crawl to the finish line, then you'll deserve some drop of mercy from Prabhupada at the end of it, right? So I've been having a big issue with that idea for some time now, because it's not a very healthy way for people to live their lives, right? That for 50 years I have to suffer, and then my reward is that maybe I'll get some, you know, mercy at the end of that 50 years. And there's a group that I'm a part of online, which is a kind of like, it's a satire, it's a group for jokes, to make fun of people who were born basically in the era of Srila Prabhupada's disciples. They're called baby boomers. Who's ever heard of that generation of people, right? There's a joke now, okay, boomer. So this Facebook group is based around that whole joke. And the premise of this group is that the young people speak and act like baby boomers. And one of the common themes of jokes in this group, which are all very funny, is the idea that husband and wife hate each other. And they post all of these old cartoons from the 70s, 80s, 90s, old newspaper strips and editorials and magazines of husband and wife making fun of each other in this kind of resentful way. And it recently occurred to me that, oh, this is kind of the culture of marriage that we've had in our ISKCON society for the last 30, 40 years. And it's actually not coming from our philosophy. Nowhere in our philosophy do you see Kardama Muni treating Devahuti in that way. Do you? No, he celebrates her. He gets her everything she wants and more. Right? And she celebrates him. When he finally leaves, she celebrates that ability of him to leave, perfect his life, and then have the opportunity to perfect her own. So you don't see any of this resentment and subtle anger and envy, etc., blaming and shaming. Where did it come from? It actually largely came from this generation of baby boomers, because that sociologically is how they grew up, resenting their own parents, so then resenting their own situation as parents and mother, father, husband, wife. So the cultural context that our movement is happening in, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we talked about yesterday. Why did he simplify Krishna consciousness so dramatically in some ways? Because Krishna consciousness had been made to be so many other things in West Bengal in the middle of the Bengali Renaissance. It was either for serious ascetics like Gaurakishore Das Babaji, so you either live nowhere and it's just you and your japamala. That's one kind of Hare Krishna Vaishnav. And the other kind of Hare Krishna Vaishnav is just a sexual pervert who's using Vaishnavism as an excuse to enjoy himself in a licentious way. Those are the only two kind of Hare Krishna Vaishnavas that anybody was really aware of when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was beginning his preaching 140 years ago. So was Bhaktivinoda Thakur indifferent to that social context? Was he unaware of the influence of that, or was he acutely aware? Was he extremely sensitive to that dynamic and preaching towards it and away from it constantly? So, yeah, cultural context. What is the difference? What is the difference in ethic between a baby boomer, a Gen X, a millennial, and a Gen Z. Please raise your hand if you even know what I mean by any of these terms. Okay. Now keep your hand up if you'd be able to actually describe to us the difference in the values of those four different generations. Okay. Now how are we supposed to help them see what's valuable about Krishna consciousness if we don't know what they value? There's something about Krishna that's attractive to everyone. I mean, just look at them. They're so attractive. There's something about Krishna that will attract everyone. However, based on their experience of the three modes of material nature, everyone's going to be attracted by a different certain something. So the classic Hare Krishna way of preaching is that we just download the whole philosophy on someone, and if they're still alive or awake at the end, then... Charity, yes. It's charitable to first sit and listen. Figure out what is this person like and want? What is their interest? What are their concerns? And then from there, help them recognize how Krishna is going to be able to meet those. Srila Prabhupada and his community is going to be able to meet those. Okay, let's get a... Is this a pretty good list so far? Because it's probably a good time to transition. Are we pretty good on a list of compelling topics? So now let's narrow down five. And the five means that you are ready to take on a group leadership role. So I want five people to pick one topic each as theirs to hold a group space around. So we're going to need some leaders to step forward now. I'll wait. I don't want to have to point at people. Yes? Fantastic, because I was going to nominate you if you didn't yourself. Okay, so Mother Radhika will hold that group. So anybody that would like to have a discussion around education of youth, plan to get with Mother Radhika when we break off into our groups in a moment. Who's our next leader? Group topic space holder. Mukunda. Okay. Okay, beautiful. Thank you. So that will be Mukunda. I saw Prabhu back there have his hand. Congregational education. Great. And I'm gonna group in resources for families and congregational education. We're gonna combine those two. Ujjwal? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, we've got one, two, three, four. We need one more. Or maybe we'll just stick with four. Because we have a smaller group. Okay. Yeah, we'll stick with the four. So, now, let's have Ujjwala's group here. Let's have Mukunda's group in the corner. Let's have, Prabhu, your name again? Sundar? Sundar Anand. Okay, thank you. We'll have you in this corner, and we'll have Mother Radhika in this corner. So, I'm now going to assign an acharya to each group to consider the topic from that particular devotee's angle of vision. What would that devotee particularly want us to think, want us to approach, want us to implement based on this dynamic which we all recognize could be healthier in our movement today? So, Ujjwala Prabhu, we're going to give you Bhaktivinoda Thakur. For spiritual purpose, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta.
So when you say the acharya, are you also referring to how you had defined the metaphorical position?
Yeah, so their metaphorical position, if you're feeling a little nervous about how do I apply this person's particular idea, because I don't know enough about them, etc., then take shelter of their position in the metaphor. Because that's what this metaphor is meant to help us do, is to relate to that person and see their vision in a way that we haven't been able to before. So take that metaphor and use it to apply in this particular question's case. For community resources, please take Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. You see the irony there. And then Srila Jagannath Das Babaji for education of children. It feels challenging, right? Yes, so the metaphorical position of Jagannath Das Babaji is as the customer. So there's something beautiful there to be had for educating children also. For Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's the architect. For Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, or for Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, he's the consultant. And for Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he's the engineer. Then our Srila Prabhupada is the contractor, and we're all the subcontracted and laborers. So now I'm tempted to just have everybody count off 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, and split you in the groups. That might be better than letting you go to places that you are inspired to, because you might try to go where it seems easier. So I think we'll do that. Everybody who didn't take on a leadership role, we'll just start here with Shravan. Please count by 1, 2, 3, 4. Perfect. Anybody in the back that would like to participate, you guys can just jump into a space as you like. Okay, so go ahead and break off into groups. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't give you... So one last thing which will hopefully help to frame... Huh? Oh, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. So last element, and this one I'll leave up on the board. So this is the three eyes of intelligence. And we're not going to spend a lot of time discussing them because they are intuitive, and it would be a different seminar if we got too much into it. But there's three kinds of intelligence that social scientists have kind of fleshed out. How are my circles? Pretty okay? Circle-y. I like enough. So the first kind of intelligence, which is usually the most emphasized in the Western world, is cognitive or IQ. So what do we mean by IQ or cognitive intelligence? Yeah, I'm processing information. And this is highly valued today in the world. And cognitive intelligence is very helpful. When it's overemphasized, though, it can be very dangerous. Wall Street is a great example. Right? Lots of cognitive intelligence, algorithms, etc. But there's no emotional intelligence. Emotional. And there's no behavioral. What's behavioral intelligence? Etiquette. Yeah, knowing how to be when you're somewhere. Okay, two people are talking. I have something very important to say. But it's not an emergency, so I'll let them finish talking. Oh, thank you, yeah, lights. I'm usually like, I like candles, so it's hard to get me to say turn on the lights. Thank you, Mukunda. So two people are talking, and I want to say something to them. But it's not an emergency, it's not life or death. So should I interrupt their speaking, or should I wait my turn? Wait. Yeah, I should wait, right? That's behavioral intelligence. A simplistic example of behavioral intelligence. I'm supposed to give the Sunday feast class, but then His Holiness Raghunath Maharaj walks in, unexpected and unannounced. Now what's the behaviorally intelligent thing to do for me, who's supposed to give the Sunday feast class? Yeah, Maharaj, would you please give class? That's also emotional intelligence. But it's behavioral intelligence, because that's the etiquette, that's the culture. Right? Now the emotional intelligence comes in if I actually feel like I want Maharaj to give the class. Or if I recognize that I'm feeling angry because I was ready to sit up on the Vyasasana and have everybody praise me for my clever words. And despite of that angry feeling in my heart, I still should ask Maharaj to give the class, because that's the proper behavior of somebody who's practicing Krishna consciousness. So the action precedes the feeling. And that takes some cognitive recognition also, doesn't it? Okay, how are the devotees going to be better off, hearing from me or hearing from Maharaj? So the three work together to create the healthy experience of our real self. However, when one of these intelligences are overemphasized, then you have a really unhealthy sense of self. For instance, how many of you know of or have been that devotee who knows exactly what to do, what to say, when to say it, where to say it, and you've been doing it for every day of your Krishna conscious life, but on the emotional side, internally, you're feeling very different from what you're doing? Anybody ever had that experience? Yeah. Anybody ever let that experience go on for too long? Where you're behaving some way, but emotionally something else is going on, and you're not admitting it. You're not facing it. You're not discussing it. It creates an imbalance which creates all kinds of challenges for everybody, including, of course, first ourselves. So please use this framework to think about how our glorious acharyas balance these different kinds of intelligence in their dealings, in their personal example, in their relationship with Krishna, and their teachings of how we can have a relationship with Krishna, and use that in your discussions around those four topics of concern that we chose. And we're going to come back together at 4:17. We're going to come back together at 4:17 and have the group leaders summarize for us the approach that they feel the particular acharya you're focusing your conversation on would like us to take in regards to that particular issue. It's not a problem. It's something that can be improved. That's important to recognize. In spiritual life, it's nava-nava, it's ever fresh. So one of the big reliefs, we can take a burden off our shoulders in Krishna consciousness. Nothing's wrong. It could just be better. And when we realize that, our communication of what could be better will be received a lot more effectively. It could be better. And that's the spiritual world. There could always be one more flower. There could always be one more milk sweet. One more mantra. So it could always be better. So that's the opportunity we're discussing now. So please now break into your groups so that we don't lose any more time. We're doing really well right now. 4:17 we'll get back. So you should have 15 minutes to be able to chew on this together. Again, Ujjvala's group there, Mukunda's group, Sundarananda Prabhu's group, and Mother Radhika's group. 1, 2, 3, 4. Where would you like to go?
I don't know, anywhere.
Okay. You can, let me see which group. Maybe here in Sundarananda, you can sit in that chair. devotees, bring it in. We'll have to cut it off there. Come back to our circle. Bring it in tight, bring it in tight, bring it in tight. We know how many of us there are now, so we can come close. Come in close, come in close. That way we won't have to strain to be able to hear each other. Before we get into the individual groups, just quickly popcorn some reflections on that exercise. What you found helpful about it, if anything. Appreciation, complaint, comment. Ujvala. Hold on. Let's give him a mic.
I was amazed. I was amazed by the earnest input from the group. Mm. I was a bit intimidated by the idea of leading something on quite a deep topic in 2 minutes for 10 minutes with 6 people.
Yeah.
So I was really happy that everybody really came together and poured their mind into the thing, and I think we really came up with some cool stuff. I was really happy with this exercise.
Jai. I was thinking, should I plan this more or not? Should I like pick leaders beforehand, or should I just let it be this very spontaneous and uncomfortable thing? Yeah, we have to surrender in those moments. Yeah.
Yeah, I had 2 reflection points.
Please.
First, I've always wondered that in the early 20th century and 21st century, we have had a lot of saints in India, but not all of those sampradayas today exist, like they somehow disintegrated.
Mm.
Now, I wonder, what is the success story behind ISKCON as an organization?
Yeah.
And now I see what's the reason behind it, like, you know, it's a glimpse, so that's first.
Jai.
And second was that oftentimes as individuals grow spiritually, they tend to go away from society and become more focused on their spiritual progress.
Mm.
Like they have this sense of vairagya of moving away from the society.
Mm.
Although Prabhupada is perhaps a great example of how he still managed to progress as an individual in a spiritual path and yet focus on the society as against, you know, deriding the society in general.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing. Mukunda.
That was very nice appreciation.
Yeah, totally.
I was feeling very overwhelmed. It seems almost ridiculous to try to talk about such a massive challenge,
yeah,
in 10-15 minutes, you know, with some, you know, with
strangers,
me not knowing anything and like us not having any sense of what it means to be a leader or an organizer or so anyway, just having that, I think it was a humility check.
Hmm.
That it's not like just because our leaders, you know, just because we may see something that we think can be improved doesn't mean they're not already doing everything they can to try to improve it.
Mm.
Or that they're not,
mm,
or, you know, there's very qualified people that are trying.
Yeah.
So we have to see that and appreciate that.
And so you were able to see the magnitude of what they have to try to address,
yeah,
from your position today.
Yeah.
Very nice. Thank you. Yeah, that's been my experience also as I've had opportunities to spend time in leadership circles in ISKCON. I realized, yeah, there's very qualified people doing their best, and these issues are very daunting. So, very good. Anybody else? And then we'll get into sharing from the individual groups. Okay, so we'll hear from Ujvala Prabhu first, and he's going to be summarizing for us ashrams, improving the ashram dynamic, Grihastha and temple ashram specifically, and they took the vision of Bhaktivinoda Thakur as their guiding light.
So we discussed the situation of kind of an overhaul of the ashrams and how we can approach looking at ashrams, particularly we could say the renunciate ashram, the brahmachari ashram, and the grihastha ashram, from the kind of archetypal standpoint of how Bhaktivinoda Thakur would envision things and how a system could be created that they're more conducive. I don't want to, should I restate the problem or just say the solutions that we came up?
Yeah.
Yeah. So one brilliant idea that we came to a consensus of is that there needs to be a first ashram. Shravan originally said fifth ashram, but a first ashram, which is more like a time-bound experience, where someone is allowed to, without any guilt, without any feeling of pressure, without any feeling of a social stigma, actually be vulnerable enough and comfortable enough to figure out who they are and where they need to be. And then the second one, which was quite nice, which Prabhu said, was that we need a culture of vulnerability in our society so people can enter into that space, because we're kind of dominated by this very shallow, impersonal culture of everybody pretending to be a really nice devotee, but on the inside really suffering because they feel like they can't share anything with other people.
What type of intelligence is that relying too much on, that scenario that you just described? Yeah, relying on behavioral intelligence in denial of any need for emotional intelligence. Exactly. Thank you. Excellent. Mukunda.
Yeah, so our group talked about spiritual purpose, and I apologize, we didn't get too far into like where, how to approach it from our metaphorical point of view. We were so engrossed in just trying to talk and understand it. So basically spiritual purpose, you know, more specifically the issue is that communities that lack spiritual purpose will crumble. And we talked a lot about the parallels and differences between what happened when Bhakti Siddhanta left the planet and how his spiritual community crumbled or disintegrated, whereas when Prabhupada left the planet, you know, we're still standing strong, and we've actually grown since that time. And so what are some of the different factors that may attribute to that success, continued success, is that leaders within a community should certainly be on the same page. And along those lines, if, you know, naturally different groups of people within a community will be inspired by different leaders within that community, but then everyone should be seeing how these leaders are nourishing each other. Because when all of us subordinates are looking up and we see unity between, you know, amongst our leaders, then we feel that unity trickle down towards us also. Also, Deva Madhaprabhu had a nice comment, organization should not be the deity. ISKCON is our facilitator of spiritual practice, but it's not that we worship ISKCON itself. And then one other point is that strong leaders spend enough quality time with their followers where even when that leader is not present, when they leave the planet, then the followers have gained enough, you know, personal love and care from that leader that they feel inspired to move on and to not completely lose it when this person leaves the planet, which we do see also.
Changes areas of service, right?
Yeah,
and isn't present anymore so much physically.
Yeah.
Yeah, wonderful points. Pretty good for a group that didn't get into it enough. Okay, where's Sundarananda Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. It was wonderful with our group members because it is very short time and it's a broad topic. So we couldn't get to the specifics, but we could get into the broad principles and how Gaurakishore Das Babaji would see it. So the way we summarized it is like this. One is Gaurakishore Das Babaji himself was a person of integrity, so standing to his values no matter what situation. So taking the inspiration as part of the education, we can train devotees to accept wherever they are and how to make the practical next step instead of doing something beyond their ability and losing the path or not making nice progress. That was one thing we could emphasize in the education. And then second aspect was Gaurakishore Babaji gave the instructions like you described, the three instructions. From that, one of the things we can learn is how we can be in the world but not of the world, or another way it's described is how we can be like a lotus but not get wet with water. And another way it's described is we give association in the world, but we don't need to take their association. So from that principles, we thought this is a very important thing in the, as part of the education, to teach everyone so that they can sustain their spiritual life and growth like that. And then third aspect was about how you described how as a consultant he was focused on the core thing, which is chanting and hearing. So that is showing us what is the main thing. So from that we took that the education should focus on different people are at different ashramas, different levels, that's okay. And each person has a different set of challenges from different areas of their lives. So how do you prioritize the sadhana irrespective of the daily challenges of different situations of different varieties for each people? That can be the core part of the education, so that people are not lost but still making progress at their own pace. So, and then in the same line, we also learned from Gaurkidas Babaji how he was emphasizing simple living. So he didn't have anything other than the two, three positions he had, like that skull and tiger cap, which also he gave, like that. So we can also emphasize simple living. That doesn't necessarily mean go to farm and leave everyone, but whatever situation they are in, how can they make their life simple so they can focus on spiritual life? And then one last thing. So about the, someone devotee was describing how devotees initially has a lot to learn and then they slowly reduce their learning. Yeah. So to help with that, we can have seminars that go in depth into a particular topic so that will sustain their enthusiasm for a new topic also. That's all true.
Pretty surprising that you could get so much around community from somebody who renounced community. Right, so thank you. Wonderful work from that group.
Honestly, I was quite overwhelmed. I can relate with some of Mukunda's feelings of what am I supposed to do here? And as a group, we were kind of unclear. We were struggling. We were, you know, fuzzy about how to relate the metaphor. But anyway, this is what we discussed. We talked about how Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, in the metaphor, he's the customer. These children that we are, our youth that we are talking about training are also the customer. And we see, for example, you know, successful movements, they do well with their children. That's how, you know, those religious and spiritual, movements and organizations or groups and cultures thrive. So, we talked about creating temples that are places of spiritual education from the very beginning, not just playgrounds where children are running. So more structured education for children with trained facilitators and trained teachers. We talked about the transition from childhood into teen years. Unfortunately, we had a couple of our Hare Krishna youth, you know, that have made that transition, and how we have a lot, it seems, until like 12, and then we talked about creating more or having, you know, structures and youth groups and more enlivenment for the teen years and making that transition into adult life. Also about providing freedom of choices and empowering and entrusting responsibility upon youth. And then finally, we didn't get very far with this, but we talked about, you know, it seems like we're framing, when we think of education of youth, we're framing it within the current context. So they're on a conveyor belt, and, you know, we believe in the system, and we're just thinking of how to improve it or how to make tweaks to, like, somehow infuse Krishna consciousness into it. Whereas, you know, what Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj envision it differently, like, you know, would he even put children on this conveyor belt that, you know, we didn't get too far with that discussion. I don't personally think he would really want that same system. And, you know, he's a pioneer and so are acharyas, and they just create systems, right? We see Prabhupada just, so, you know, what's stopping us from creating systems?
Yeah, everyone, let's give yourselves a round of applause. Thank you all for taking on the burden of this exercise. It wasn't about solving the issue necessarily, although I think some really helpful and useful insights came out just from those few minutes together. The idea of this exercise wasn't to solve the issue, rather to give us the impetus, the inspiration to approach these issues with each other and with the acharyas. We're not isolated. What was our motto that we shared at the beginning? Ekaki amara nahi paya bhala harinam sankirtane. Alone I do not find the strength to chant. If we isolate Srila Prabhupada, we won't find the strength to serve his mission. If though we come together in these sanghas centered around real spiritual topics, not this one and that one and the weather and my kid and my husband and my boss and my real spiritual topics that matter to us, that are affecting our lives, and we invite the acharyas to be present there and do our best to consider them, then magic happens. That's the sense of responsibility that Srila Prabhupada was calling to in that letter where he asked for individual spontaneous and voluntary service. I was having a great discussion with Anirudh Prabhu, and a little sutra came out of that from him. It's that we often see Srila Prabhupada as the chosen one. Really though, Srila Prabhupada chose to be the one. It's often painted that Prabhupada was given this special order from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. You go to the West and you preach. And okay, that's true. And also, if you read that book by Mother Murla Prakriti that we've referenced a few times now, Srila Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj, he talks about in that book that Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, meaning Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, Guru Maharaj told all of us to do that. But Swami Maharaj was the only one crazy enough to do it. Swami Maharaj was the one who decided that's what I'm going to do for our Gurudev. And for that, he's in a special position, Srila Sridhar Maharaj says. He chose to be the one to take that instruction. So when you're listening to that lecture from Prabhupada and he's talking about educating the children, he's not just talking to Mother Radhika or to the person who has kids already. He's talking to each one of us. It's not that it's not your responsibility to educate the children. It's not that it's not your responsibility to support the brahmacharis or to nourish the grihasthas. These are all standing orders for all of us. And the intimidation that that may bring actually causes us to avoid all of it. So that's what I've hoped to bring out in this discussion over the last few days, in this metaphor of the offerings and efforts of the other acharyas, is that we're not alone in this effort. And we have even more than Srila Prabhupada's mercy. We have the mercy of this entire community, this entire organization structured to empower us to take responsibility for the spiritual well-being of ourselves and for others. America's maybe most favorite president of the modern era, John F. Kennedy, he famously said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." So if you take one thing away from the discussion, aside from the metaphorical framework, it's time we stop looking for ISKCON to do something for us and start asking, what can I do for ISKCON? From where I am, from who I am, what I understand and recognize, what can I responsibly give? And in that mood, the problem is already solved. Because in that mood, you'll be inquiring to the spiritual master, and then the mercy will come. My thanks to all of you for participating and fighting your way out of the food coma that looks like it caught some of our other friends that had joined us for the other seminars. Again, thank you to Sundari for inviting me here. I'm always really inspired to come to Chicago, and you all may feel like you have your challenges and issues here, but relative to the rest of ISKCON, I promise you, this is a blessed community. I can say it with all my heart. It's a blessed place, and there is a potential here and a momentum here that many places will have a long road ahead to get to. So please don't lose sight of that amidst day-to-day challenges that may appear to be present. take those as opportunities to have a reason to come together, to cooperate, because Srila Prabhupada said, your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate after I'm gone. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. Please forgive me if I spoke anything incorrectly, offensively. Don't take it as a reflection on Srila Prabhupada. Take it as a reflection upon me. And if you will, please have me back for whatever reason. I always enjoy coming here to Chicago and being with you all. And Kishore Kishori. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Guru Gauranga ki. Samaveda Bhaktavinda ki jai. Nithai Gaur Premanandi ki.